It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The midterm vote in Wisconsin happens November 6th. As part of our series of candidate interviews, we'll meet Mandela Barnes, the Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. He was previously a Democratic state representative for the 11th Assembly District. He faces Green Party candidate Tiffany Anderson, Libertarian candidate Patrick Baird, Republican incumbent Rebecca Clayfish, and Independent candidate Will Loesch. Mandela, welcome to the morning show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Glad to be back.
Tell me why you want to be the next lieutenant governor.
Yep, so I am running for lieutenant governor because Wisconsin has a need to restore and expand opportunity across the entire state. That's what the campaign has been about since I launched in January. And for the most part, it's what my time in the assembly was about. It's making sure that we're working to expand health care. It's about fully funding our public schools and protecting our environment, and ultimately improving the economy of this state.
You're running against four other people in the midterm elections, Green Party candidate Tiffany Anderson, Libertarian candidate Patrick Baird, Republican incumbent Rebecca Clayfish, and Independent Will Loesch. What sets you apart from the others?
I think the experience that I bring to the table in this race is much different than many of the other candidates. The issues that I speak to are issues that I've dealt with either in my personal life or have been very close to during my time in the city of Milwaukee, and also getting around the state. Sharing my story and listening to the stories of so many other people who have been left behind by government, and the need that we have for a voice that's running statewide could not be more important than this time right now.
Well, what do you consider the biggest challenge facing Wisconsin to be?
Well, the economy doesn't work for everyone. As much as the governor talks about a low unemployment rate, it dismisses the fact that we have high poverty. It dismisses the fact that there are people working multiple jobs just to get ahead. It dismisses the fact that there are people in our state who work 40 hours a week and still struggle to make ends meet. I would say the economy is probably the biggest issue because it's been framed in such a way that makes that one would think it's a success, but it's actually not. And it also impacts our children. The rate of child poverty is high, and that has an impact on the way that our children are educated because students show up to school not ready to learn, and it's reflected in test scores. It's reflected in the way that we evaluate our schools, and it's just not fair.
So how would you bring about change in this area then?
Well, the first thing we got to do, as I've talked about before, is raising the minimum wage. But going beyond that, we have to become a state that creates living wage jobs. Corporations, again, have written the rules in this state for far too long. And that's why you see the bulk of tax incentives that go to benefit our largest corporations. You also see the most wealthy individuals benefiting from the tax policies in this state. So with that said, if we are going to incentivize companies, they should be paying their workers a living wage. And we should also invest in renewable energy. I mean, that is the key to success right here in the state of Wisconsin. I've talked about a Green New Deal where we heavily invest in our renewable energy infrastructure. We can become a state that's fully powered 100% by 2050, even earlier, maybe 2035. But those are the steps that we need to take that would not just protect our environment, but also put people to work at sustainable, long-term living wage employment.
You, as you know, the role of lieutenant governor doesn't have a lot of authority under the Constitution of our state. But how would you use the job of lieutenant governor to make a difference in Wisconsin?
Well, that's the thing. Although the Constitution limits or has limits on a lot of the duties that a lieutenant governor would, you know, essentially, you know, carry out, there is a chance that we have an advocate in that office, someone who's going to make sure that when we get in office, that we're pushing a big, bold, progressive agenda because the people of Wisconsin have been waiting for it for too long. Working people are struggling to get ahead. Our environment is at risk. Healthcare is on the table right now. And, you know, I am very proud and very happy to be running with Tony Evers. I'm happy to be his running mate. I want to make sure that when we're in office, that we are effective on day one. I want to make sure that we are covering the losses from the last 7.5 years and ultimately moving the state in the right direction.
We're talking with Mandela Barnes, Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, on the morning show, part of our continuing series of candidate interviews. Well, you mentioned Tony Evers. Voters have been hearing a lot of back and forth between Governor Scott Walker's camp and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Tony Evers' camp about taxes. If Tony Evers is elected governor, could you provide some clarity here? What taxes are you and Tony Evers open to raising, and where would the tax cuts come?
Well, what we're hearing is what the governor has been making up about Tony Evers and taxes. But what Tony has put out there is a proposed 10% cut for individuals who make up to $100,000 in our state. And that same cut would apply to families making up to $150,000 in this state. That's real relief for middle-income families. If you may know, you may not know, that the middle class in the state of Wisconsin is declining quicker than most other states in the country. And that's happening because we've been forgotten about. Middle-class households, middle-class, middle-income individuals have been disregarded in this state. But we want to make sure that we're expanding the middle class in Wisconsin. And so that's the truth on taxes. And everything else is what the governor decided he wanted to say in the last few weeks of the election.
So in terms of tax policy, are there some taxes that you would just absolutely be opposed to raising?
Well, the fact is, I mean, we have to, you know, things are on the table, right? We have to look at this stuff in totality. We have to look at how we're taxing corporations. I think that, of course, those taxes should be raised on the most wealthy individuals and large companies that are making money hand over the fist in this state with very little tax burden. I think that's unfair to working people in this state. So we need to start there. I mean, if we're going to talk about tax increases, that's where we should look. And we should not disregard the fact also that so many communities in this state have voted, at least 1 million people have voted to raise their own taxes in the state of Wisconsin through referendum to fund their public schools because the state has not been a partner. The state has not fully funded public education in the way that we should have over the last several years.
The current Lieutenant Governor, Republican Rebecca Clayfish, has worked to align herself with the small business community. She considers herself an advocate in that area. If you're elected, what would your niche be?
Yeah, so I, again, I think renewable energy is probably, you know, where I see my role, not only from the standpoint of protecting the environment, but also moving our economy forward, moving us into the 21st century. If you look across the country, that's where the job growth is happening. And, you know, I come from an industrial family. My father or my grandfather worked at A.O. Smith for 30 plus years, nearly 40. My father worked at Delphi and Oak Creek for 30 years. So I know the need for us to get back to our manufacturing roots because I wouldn't be where I am today if it were not for that. But the fact is people have to be paid a living wage. And this is where Wisconsin can totally lead the nation. And I want to see that happen. I want to see us implement that Green New Deal. I want to see us be a state for the future. I want to see us become a state that is no longer the 10th most moved from state in the country, but one that is open, inviting, and welcoming to people, especially younger folks who don't see Wisconsin as a place to live, work, and raise a family anymore.
Well, speaking of moving, we know one of the things that's on the minds of voters is transportation. If elected to serve as Lieutenant Governor, what would be a top transportation priority for you right away?
Well, I want to make sure that, you know, aside from the roads, that we're looking at mass transportation. We need to be able to get people to and from the jobs in an efficient way and also reduce our carbon emissions. I think that regional transit has to be a part of the conversation, especially areas like northeastern Wisconsin that are growing in size and also southeastern Wisconsin. The people need to be able to get around easily, and I think that regional transit is an answer to a lot of the transportation woes that we have in this state.
Well, one of the issues around transportation for the last number of years has been how we pay for it. What do you think the best way is for us to pay for the transportation infrastructure that we need in the state?
Yeah, and so, I mean, like the gas tax is the most likely proposal, but I do think that it's something that we need our legislative leaders to come together on. And that's both sides of the aisle, because if you look at Scott Fitzgerald, the Republican leader in the Senate, he's not satisfied with the way that our transportation is being funded. And we are certainly not happy. And overall, most importantly, the people of this state aren't satisfied with the way that we're funding our transportation infrastructure, especially communities that are dealing with it in the worst ways. So this is something where we all need to come together in January when we have a new administration, which is obviously what we're hoping for and what we're working for, and we can solve this problem, but it's going to take everybody working together to get that done.
We have a couple of minutes left here. What do you think about the role of money in our elections? What's your take on that?
I think it's absurd. I think it's wild. I was in the legislature when they voted to double campaign contribution limits from $10,000 to $20,000 for statewide candidates. And it was, I was in the assembly then, and my limits went from $500 to $1,000. I think it opens the door to some really scary stuff. And that's why you see the amount of lies on TV, on the radio. It's why you see unfair advantages, because it allows for a select few to essentially be able to control our government. And that's not the way it should be. I think we should go back to reducing our campaign contribution limits. I think that we should. I mean, I don't think our government should be paid for, and we're going down that path.
So, what message would you like to leave us with today, Mandela?
I would like people to know that there is a better path for the state of Wisconsin. We are choosing the path of opportunity to everybody in the state, regardless of the zip code. Every child deserves to be able to thrive in the state of Wisconsin. And people who aren't from here, I want people to know that Wisconsin will one day, again, be a place where you can come, live, work, raise a family, and prosper. We haven't been that way in a very long time. But once we get back to that place, I think you'll see a much better day. And I think that Wisconsin will once again lead the nation.
Mandela Barnes, Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A majority of seniors at more than 100 high schools in Wisconsin did not fill out the free application for Federal Student Aid Form, or FAFSA, in the last application cycle. That means lots of Wisconsin students are potentially leaving money on the table when it comes to paying for college. Our guest has crunched the numbers on school districts throughout the state to find out which ones have the best FAFSA completion rates and discusses some of the reasons why some districts might be falling behind. Are you a student or recent high school graduate who filled out a FAFSA form? What were the challenges, and are you glad you did it? Parents, what about you? What hurdles did you face in helping your child with the form? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Keegan Kyle is an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. His recent piece there explores why many high school seniors in Wisconsin aren't filling out FAFSA forms. Keegan, good morning. Welcome back to The Morning Show.
Thanks for having me.
What made you look into this?
Well, the FAFSA is often part of the college funding discussion, and we've been working on a series of articles about college costs and the rising debts that students are paying. And so we wanted to take a closer look at how Wisconsin is doing at completing the FAFSA as part of a national push in recent years to improve completion rates.
So for some of us, it's been a while since we've had to deal with the free application for Federal Student Aid Form, or FAFSA. I think I still have nightmares about it, but can you remind us what it entails?
Sure. It's very similar to completing your taxes in a way. You need to know your income level. You need to sometimes have documentation to prove your residence. And there are lots of questions that you need to answer that can possibly qualify you for financial aid. Completing it can give you not only federal student aid, so discounted loans or grants, it can also open doors to state grants and college aid programs, as well as individual university college aid programs. There's a lot that can be done through the form.
And generally, is this an easy or difficult form to fill out?
The federal government says that it takes up to an hour to complete, but that can depend a lot on what documents you have already available. So some of the documents that you need, like past tax forms or proof of residence, can be tedious to come by and can slow down the process.
Your investigation found that a majority of seniors at more than 100 high schools in Wisconsin did not complete a FAFSA form in the last application cycle. What do you see as the largest implications of that finding?
Well, there have been past studies by UW-Madison researchers that show schools that have low rates of FAFSA completions tend to be schools with a higher number of low-income families. And that's really alarming because it could mean that many families that would qualify for college financial aid and are eligible for it are not receiving it because they aren't applying for it. The other thing that's alarming about this UW-Madison study is that many high schools that have low FAFSA completion rates also tend to have fewer numbers of counselors. So families are receiving less help to answer their questions about how to complete the form and make sure that they're getting the money that they're eligible for.
And before we continue, I need to ask this. Is this a form that can be filled out online, or do we still have to do the paper version?
You can do paper. There's also now even a mobile app that you can do it on your phone to complete the FAFSA. This has been part of the federal government's push to make it a lot easier because it's for a long time people have complained about the FAFSA and how difficult it is.
Yeah, it was many pages long, and I always thought that the estimate of taking an hour to fill it out was optimistic, but that was probably just me. We're talking with Keegan Kyle, investigative reporter for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. Are you a student, a recent high school graduate, or a parent who's filled out a FAFSA form? What did you find to be the challenges? Are you glad you did it? Did you have enough information about FAFSA to understand what you were doing, and did your school district give you any help with the process? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Maybe you tried and gave up because it was too hard. Let us know about that. Tell us your story, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. And we do have a caller. Lita is with us in Eau Claire. Lita, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I had actually filled out the FAFSA form for my daughter. It was extremely complicated. Like you said, you still have nightmares. And my disappointment hearing this morning that there are so many people who did not fill it out. She was awarded very little as far as federal student loans. There is no way she could have paid for tuition, room and board without my help. So that's my concern. If there's so many people who didn't fill it out, why wasn't she awarded more federal student loans?
Lita, thanks for the question. That's a great question. So if fewer people are filling out the loans or the paperwork and we're saying that people are leaving money on the table, where does it go? Does it go to people who did fill it out? How does that work, Keegan?
It can depend. The federal government, their programs usually depend on your income level. So if you qualify, you can get financial aid. There are some state and institutional programs that are a little different where it's based on how many people apply to financial aid that can weigh on the maximum or minimum dollar amount that you can receive. So it can vary a little bit from the type of financial aid program that you're applying to. But the most common state program that uses the FAFSA to apply for, students can receive thousands of dollars in grants, you know, money that they don't have to pay back to help with their college financial aid or to help pay for college through the financial aid program.
Let's take a call next from Jess, who joins us from Appleton. Jess, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Hi, I was just calling just to say that it's a very simple process. I am a student myself. I'm in my mid-30s, and I found it very simple to fill out. It's actually my second time because I got my associate's and I'm going for my bachelor's. And I did not come from a high-income family. I come from a very low-income family. And the process was, for me, it was less than 30 minutes. You just got to have some of your information, such as tax information and your living situation, and that's really it.
Jess, thanks for that call. Keegan, how common is Jess's experience?
Yeah, I think that fits in with the federal government's estimate that it can take less than an hour It also, like he said, depends on what documents you have kind of already at your disposal. So if you are already familiar with your tax situation, then it can be a lot easier to fill out, because a big part of it is estimating your income level.
And Jess is old enough not to need to put in any of his parents' information, which, you know, for most high schoolers, if mom and dad have actually owned property, that's an issue. There are other things that make it less complicated if you really are on your own. Wouldn't that be true?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think one of the challenges for getting a lot of high schoolers to complete it is that, you know, you need your parents' help versus an adult who's kind of filling it out mm-hmm. themselves. So that's always something that counselors are working on, is encouraging parents to work with their students, or they're encouraging students to work with their parents to fill out the form.
Keegan Kyle is an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. His recent piece there explores why many high school seniors in Wisconsin aren't filling out FAFSA forms. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation and find out how Wisconsin compares with the rest of the country in this area. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Why aren't Wisconsin high school students who plan on continuing their education after high school filling out their financial aid paperwork? That's the question we're asking today on the Morning Show. Parents, what about you? What hurdles did you face helping your child with the FAFSA form? Did you have enough information about FAFSA to understand what you were doing? And how did your school district help, or maybe not help, with the process? And I'm wondering if your child was planning on applying to a specific college or university, if they offered you any help at all. Did you try and give up? If so, why? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Keegan Kyle is an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. His recent piece there explores why many high school seniors in Wisconsin aren't filling out FAFSA forms. Let's go back to the phones as we start this segment and hear from Mary in Beloit. Mary, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning. I find this a very interesting subject, as I've been filling out the FAFSA form for a while, and I have more than one child in college, and one of the things that I found is if you don't fill that form out exactly with the exact same numbers each time for each successive student, it kicks the form out, and you have to try and figure out what you did differently. And it gets to be very frustrating. That's one of those times that it's not just you, John. It's a lot of people trying to figure out exactly which number they put in back. You know, if you transpose a couple numbers, you know, you have to start all over again, and there's, it's just really difficult in that regard. So I've learned that I just take and every number I write down, or every number I put in, I write down the question number and the answer I gave, just to make sure that I'm duplicating everything exactly. And that was my big frustration.
Hey, Mary, you were filling the form out online, I take it then?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, Keegan. What about Mary's point that the electronic form itself isn't always as user friendly as it might be?
Yeah, that sounds like a great argument for doing it in paper instead, or using her method of, you know, kind of double checking your work as you go along. That sounds like a really great approach. There have been concerns about the electronic system not working well, so it's concerning to hear that still being an issue, but it's something that is definitely on the radar, and it's something that people are watching.
Yeah, there are a lot of electronic forms. You go to fill them out, whether it's for a credit card or anything else. You make one mistake, and it doesn't save any of the information you just put in. It takes you right back to the start, and that can be a little frustrating. Mary, thanks for that call. How does Wisconsin stack up, Keegan, to the rest of the nation when it comes to the percentage of students filling out FAFSA applications?
Yeah, so about half of the state's high school seniors typically complete the form each year, which is a little below national averages, but in the bottom half of the states in the country. It's also quite below the leading states like Tennessee and Louisiana. In Louisiana, the nation's top state, about 77% of high school seniors are completing the form annually.
Now, Louisiana, I'm glad you brought that up because they passed a law that it's kind of a requirement now for high school students to fill out these FAFSA applications, isn't it?
Right. It was their state kind of educational board passed a policy that made it a condition of high school graduation. Every high school senior must complete a financial aid form, either the federal form or a state form, or they must obtain a waiver in order to graduate.
Okay. Let's take another call. Emma joins us now from Green Bay. Emma, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I filled this out last night and finished at 9:30. And I've done it before. I agree with exactly what the previous caller said, that you need to have everything exactly like you've done it before or you can't get through the application, and there's no one to talk to. There is literally, if you can potentially get a chat with somebody, but they don't really answer the question that you give them. So my other point is that if you read the information prior about what your expectations are when you're going to potentially get a loan, specifically the government-sponsored ones, you're basically already aware that you have on the average, around $5,500. And it's kind of a little bit incrementally increased after that if you have multiple students in school. But I believe unless you make something as low as around $20,000 per family, you are not eligible for anything that's called a grant.
Emma, thanks. Thanks for the call. Keegan?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the dollar amount. I'm just not that familiar with them. The one caution I would say is that the federal aid programs, their limits differ from state limits for college aid programs or institutional programs. So there are for sure some institutions that have much higher limits than $20,000 where you can be eligible for thousands of dollars of aid. But to qualify for that, you must complete the FAFSA as part of their application process. So even though you might not be eligible for federal assistance, it still can be very important to complete the FAFSA in order to qualify for institutional or state assistance.
Let's take a call next from Jocelyn in Madison. Jocelyn, good morning.
Good morning. I love your show. My name, you know my name. So I work at the University of Wisconsin as a financial aid advisor, and I just want to say that there's College Go Wisconsin, which happens all over the state of Wisconsin, where financial aid professionals and folks from all over come to help families complete the financial aid application. And I just encourage families to look it up. One in Madison that's happening tonight is at East High School from 6 to 8. There's also going to be one at the Urban League, not College Go Wisconsin, but a scholarship day, helping students look for scholarships and also helping students complete the financial aid application. And Saturday's at the Urban League from like 9 to 1.
All right, Jocelyn, thanks for that call. So, Keegan, talk about the role of volunteer groups here. Jocelyn mentioned one called College Go Wisconsin. You mentioned that in your piece. What kind of work are they doing?
Yeah, they're a group of volunteer financial aid advisors who travel to high schools around the state and take questions from parents and students, and they try to help them through the application process. They will often host events at schools where families can sit down at a computer and have a financial aid advisor kind of guide them through the process. Sometimes they are also just more of like a question and answer session. And, you know, once parents go home, they can complete the FAFSA form. So they can be tremendously helpful, particularly in schools where counselors are not financial aid experts, or there aren't a lot of counselors to really help a lot of families with their questions. And so these big events where a lot of families get together can be a great way to kind of elevate the community's education.
What role do colleges and universities play here? Should they have a stake in alerting incoming students to the resources potentially available to them?
Yes, and some colleges are actively trying to work to improve FAFSA completion rates, not only with the students who are applying to their institutions, but to schools across the state or country. So UW-Madison is one. There are some colleges active in Northeast Wisconsin that are sending their staff into high schools and trying to help students apply, complete the FAFSA form regardless of where they're applying to school. The idea being that the more people that apply for financial aid, there's more people that are going to be able to pay for college.
Any plans to follow up on this reporting?
Yeah, we'd like to continue to follow the FAFSA completion numbers in the future, because there is a push by College Goal Wisconsin and some other organizations to improve rates, and we'd like to track whether that is happening over time.
Keegan Kyle is an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. His recent piece there explores why many high school seniors in Wisconsin aren't filling out FAFSA forms. Keegan, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network coming up. Sean Johnson joins me, and we're going to talk about the debate over tax policy between candidates for governor in Wisconsin. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. As the campaign for governor races toward its end, both campaigns are talking about taxes. Democratic challenger Tony Evers has announced a plan to cut taxes for middle-class Wisconsinites by 10%. Governor Walker has characterized Evers' plan as a tax increase. We'll sort out the tax claims and counterclaims with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. Sean, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi, John.
A Democratic candidate for Governor Tony Evers pledged to cut income taxes for the middle class by 10% if elected. Specifically, who would qualify for this cut?
It sounds like under Evers' plan, he's talking about cutting taxes for individuals who earn less than $100,000, families who earn less than $150,000. And, you know, those would be the people who qualify for this 10% income tax cut. And it allows him to say, I focused it on the middle class. He has that cutoff there at 150 for families and 100 for individuals, because he has been, of course, critical of the governor for cutting taxes for wealthy people in Wisconsin.
So how would the Evers plan pay for this tax cut?
I would say for anything we're talking about with tax cuts or, you know, any kind of budget policy, we probably would really have to wait to find out until, you know, next February or March, if we're being honest. But we do know that Tony Evers has proposed getting rid of the governor's kind of signature tax cut, tax credit for manufacturers and agriculture. And that has become a big expense in the state budget. It's roughly $300 million a year now that it costs a state government. So, I mean, that is a obvious source of potential revenue if he wanted to go there. I guess the thing you have to qualify that with is that Tony Evers has also talked about prioritizing spending for schools, for higher education, other areas of state government. So $300 million a year is a lot of money, but the priority list is also long.
Yeah, there's certainly, it seems to me, like to everybody else, that money is kind of like closet space. No matter how much you have, you need more.
Right.
But clearly, you know, the governor's budget goes to the legislature and requires its approval or cooperation. So what's known about changes are needed for the state's tax code and what kind of reception that would get in the legislature?
And again, that kind of depends on what kind of legislature we're looking at next year. We know right now that this legislature is a very Republican legislature. I mean, the Senate has an 18-15 majority, 64-35 majority for Republicans in the Assembly. They have done what the governor wants, what Governor Walker wants. They would do what the governor wants if those margins were turned again next year and Governor Walker is still governor. There's just no given that Republicans are going to hang on to the legislature, certainly in those numbers. I mean, I think the state Senate in particular is very much up for grabs. And so, you know, if that were to happen, if Democrats were to flip that chamber, then who knows what you're talking about in terms of what kind of a budget deal could get done. So there's just a lot of unknowns here beyond the revenue, you know, beyond how much money we have, where what gets cut to, you know, pay for these priorities. It's who's sitting in those seats in the legislature come January.
So at a campaign event earlier this week, Governor Walker responded to the Evers plan, saying it actually amounts to a tax hike. What argument is the governor making here?
So I think what the governor is talking about with Evers' plan being a tax hike is he's talking about property taxes. And I don't think he's talking specifically necessarily about the income tax cut. I'm not sure. But what the governor has said pretty consistently is that Evers' plan would to spend more on schools would amount to a property tax hike. And he has also characterized Evers' plan to get rid of this manufacturing and agriculture tax credit as a tax hike. If you watch ads from the governor's campaign right now, if you watch ads from now the Republican Governors Association, they're really focused on that agricultural side of it. They're saying Tony Evers wants to get rid of this tax credit that raises taxes on farmers. You know, that can't happen. Vote for Walker. That's kind of their message in a nutshell. But at the same time, you also hear Walker kind of dipping a toe into a traditionally Democratic message in this campaign. And while Tony Evers is talking about cutting taxes on one side, Scott Walker is talking about going back to 2/3 state funding for education on the other side. And, you know, much like we're not exactly sure how Evers' plan would be funded in the next legislature. I mean, we've got some general ideas, but we're not 100% sure. I think you could say the same thing about Walker's plan to increase spending more on schools next year. We don't really know where that extra money would come from.
Sean, this tax cut announcement comes just days after the Marquette Law School poll found that Governor Walker now holds a 1-point lead among likely voters in this race. In the poll before that, Evers had a 5-point lead over Walker. I mean, a cynic might make a connection here. Is anyone out there making the case that this tax cut proposal is just a political ploy?
I think you look at this race, it looks pretty close. I mean, you mentioned the Marquette poll had Walker up 1. There was an NBC Marist poll that had Evers up 10 on Walker. But I think it's generally perceived as being a close race, or certainly one that is winnable by either side right now. And there's 3 weeks to go before Election Day. And so you have, I definitely think that's a factor in why you see Tony Evers out there proposing a big middle-class tax cut, and Governor Walker proposing another big increase on school spending. They're trying to grab that last handful of persuadable votes out there if the race is indeed as close as people think it is.
So Tony Evers proposing to cut taxes for the middle class, individuals making less than $100,000, families with incomes of $150,000 or less. What about Governor Walker? What is he or his campaign saying about what could be in store for middle class taxpayers?
So, I mean, the governor's basically been running on his record when it comes to tax cuts. That has been, you know, I think it's kind of like a foundation of his governorship. His tenure in office has been pushing tax cuts of some kind in pretty much every budget. And so he's pointed to those. And, you know, at least to my ears, his message on taxes has been more of a warning than a promise. He's saying that if you like this stuff, it'll go away if I'm not there.
Yeah, and what about, there's been some talk of, oh, property taxes are going up, but Wisconsin voters in referenda all over the state have said, yeah, okay, if it's for education, I don't mind paying a little more in taxes. Is that message getting lost here?
Yeah, so it's been important to Walker to say, and he can't quite say that in this budget, but it's been important for him to point to this kind of median value home in Wisconsin and say, look, all other things equal, property taxes are going down. I think they tick up very slightly under the latest numbers from the legislature's budget office. So it's kind of it's an interesting argument if you just set aside all of the rest of the factors that are going in Wisconsin. But yeah, you're right. I mean, people in communities after community, there are voters who are saying, raise my taxes to pay for schools. And in fact, if you look at polling from Marquette, that's where most of the public is at right now, that they would be okay with increasing taxes to pay for schools and other government services.
Given where we are, and as you said, we're just weeks away from Election Day, what are you watching for here as the conversation about tax plans continues?
I guess I'm watching for, you know, more plans to come out potentially. This 10% tax cut from Evers wasn't something that people gave a lot of thought to a few weeks ago. And here it is. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Governor Walker saying that let's go back to 2/3 funding is not something he's talked about for years. And here it is. So it could be an exciting few weeks if they're looking to, you know, get that last little edge in this competitive governor's race, you know, what they might propose to try to get that.
We've been talking about taxes and school funding. What other issues are on your radar, Sean, beyond these? Which messages are we seeing the candidates hit?
You are seeing it's not income taxes or property taxes. You are seeing a lot of talk about roads versus the gas tax, though. And this is one where Democrats feel like they have an issue that's going to work for them. The fact that Wisconsin roads are not in great shape, people are recognizing this. And so they've been really hammering Governor Walker on that issue, that that he's let the roads go bad. Vote Democrat. But Governor Walker has been kind of taking the flip side of that, and knowing that people don't, while people don't like the condition of roads, they also don't like to raise the gas tax, and warning that Tony Evers would raise the gas tax. That's one of the taxes that he's been in his warning about Evers.
And also telling the Towns Association that they were going to get more money for local roads as well.
Right. Okay. Which is like a small number in the overall scheme of the budget. But yeah, that's one area where he has been willing to pledge more.
Okay. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. Thank you so much, Sean.
Thanks, John.
For additional coverage of the Wisconsin gubernatorial race and other races, visit WPR.org and WisconsinVote.org. Coming up, China is the world's leading buyer of recyclables. The country adopted an anti-pollution program, though, this year, setting a difficult standard to meet for America's single-stream recycling plans. We'll talk about how China's new policies are impacting the recycling industry in the United States and in Wisconsin. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson.